Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. I'm sure some of you have done what I did this weekend, and I was sitting there hanging out with some friends and family, scrolling through social media. And on some of the different bass fishing groups, there's been some controversy stirring, people making their opinions known about the proposed black bass regulations on the Coosa River reservoirs, some reservoirs kind of changing the way that tournaments are done, some suggested changes to the management of those lakes on that Coosa River system. So we're going to be doing, we may squeeze it all in this week, we may do this week and next week, depending on how long the interviews go, but we're going to be talking with a representative from Alabama DCNR, and we're going to be talking with a representative from the Alabama Bass Trail, hear both sides of the stories, and hopefully just get some information out there so that you can decide what you think about it. I think for the time being, ADCNR is accepting public comments, so this may be something where you can educate yourself and then decide if you'd like to weigh in, make a comment, or just be better informed at the next water cooler session with your fishing buddies. So in order to get all this done today, we're going to be talking with Damon Abernathy. Damon, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Tell for our audience who's not familiar, go ahead and just let us know what is it that you do for DCNR?
Well, I am the Assistant Chief of Fisheries, and I've worked in several different roles for the department, but I've been here for over 20 years. I worked a few years prior to this in South Carolina, but I'm an Alabama native. I grew up fishing the Tennessee River, and I've been down here in the Montgomery area now for over 20 years. So I now have a pretty good bit of experience on the Coosa River too. In fact, I live on one of the lakes and fish quite a bit. I used to tournament fish. I haven't done it in several years, but for a period of time there, I was pretty heavily involved in tournament fishing too. So I kind of understand both sides of this issue. I got my education at Auburn University. Went to school there in the 90s. I was there almost an entire decade, I guess. So I was there a long time. Studying under Mike Messina, did have a lot of experience, managing these fisheries and just, I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I'd probably rather fish for a living, but, this is the next best thing.
That's about how I feel about my position. I'd rather be out there underwater catching fish every day, but the next best thing to catching fish is talking about fishing. And, yeah, we were just this weekend, my wife and I, we went up to visit some friends in Nashville, and we came, passed over the Tennessee system, rode through the Coosa Valley, passed over the Alabama River there in Montgomery. So there's a lot of fisheries, and I know something that always blows me away is the diversity of the fisheries that we have. We got down here in the Mobile Tensaw Delta. That's a very, very, very different fishery from the Tennessee change, and like I've floated the Tallapoosa River up above Lake Martin, and just those three systems, you go from Gunnersville to the Tallapoosa River to the Mobile Tensaw Delta, it's wildly different. And we talk every week with professionals, guides, tournament anglers, and there's a lot of constants between watersheds, like crappie will be crappie, and they're going to have similar traits no matter what watershed that they're in, and the same is true with bass. But like we just wrapped up some recordings where we were asking people what their top three bass rods would be, and their recommendations, there was some common ground, but they were all a little bit different because they're fishing different fisheries. You've got mm-hmm. some lakes where you're doing more offshore deep water fishing. You got some stuff like down here where I'm at, where, you're fishing more of a shallower river system. Like Gunnersville's got a lot of grass. There's some lakes to have almost no grass. So I guess kind of we'll dip our toe into the issue at hand. Could you start by explaining the challenges that are currently facing the black bass fishery specifically on that Coosa River reservoirs, and what led y'all to fund the study that's kind of at the heart of this issue?
Sure. I'd be glad to do that. The fishermen have been complaining for years about the declining quality of the fishery on the Coosa. And it's a great fishery. It really is. It's probably the most fertile river system in our state, even more fertile than the Tennessee River. So this river has a lot of potential to produce big fish, but it isn't doing that and hasn't done that in a long time. That's not to say you don't catch an occasional big fish, but there is a lot of unrealized potential in this river system. A lot of the reason for that is because these are very small lakes. I mean, if you look at them, they're, five of the six are less than 15,000 acres. Most of your popular tournament reservoirs are considerably larger than that, and they can handle heavy tournament pressure a lot better than the Coosa can. Catch and release, as far as the impact that all that has on our ability to manage the resource, it's probably a little more difficult than people think. Most of your traditional length and bag limits were designed to control harvest, and harvest is almost zero on all of those lakes. Catch and release is responsible for that, and it's a good thing. I'm not saying that it isn't. It's a very good thing, but it complicates your ability to manage the resource. All you can do is control anglers' behavior, and they're releasing essentially everything they catch. I know there's harvest going on. There's plenty of people, sitting on buckets and fishing below those dams, and they harvest plenty of fish. But for every one like that, there's probably 50 who release everything they catch. So harvest overall, at a population level, it's really not an issue. So it makes it a little more difficult to manage these fisheries. The tournament pressure is very heavy on the Coosa. You may have that same number of tournaments on a larger lake like Guntersville, and a big reservoir like that has a whole lot more fish in it than those small Coosa River lakes. It's just you got to keep those kind of things in mind, that the tournament pressure is relative to the size of the fishery that they're fishing on. So we've got to reduce the tournament pressure. That's really the only source of fishing mortality that exists. With harvest rates as low as they are, doing things that impact their behavior is not going to result in any improvement in the quality of the fishery. And that's our goal. We try to manage these fisheries for the benefit of everyone. And because of tournament pressure on these small lakes, quality has declined pretty considerably over the last 7 or 8 years.
For sure. So, and that's, I kind of read a little bit on that study, but I am, I got my bachelor's degree in business marketing, so I have some education, but I'm not a fisheries biologist. So I'm excited to get the chance to have somebody on the other end of the line to kind of explain some of that stuff to me. The study that y'all did with Auburn, what did that reveal about tournament mortality and how that specifically impacts your larger bass and your faster growing fish?
Well, they looked at several things. We, of course, we do our own surveys and research internally, but there were several questions that we still needed answers to before we were comfortable making a recommendation like this. So we told them what we wanted them to look at, and that's how research is done. I've had a lot of people say, well, you had to preconceived notion. Well, yeah, we did, and it was Auburn's job to test that theory, whether it was true or false, and they did that in an unbiased way, and we hired an outside source to do that for us. and what they saw supported a lot of what we assumed, which was that, it's no surprise tournament fishermen are targeting the largest bass they can find. And they were catching those larger bass at a rate, almost four times higher than their relative abundance in the population. So they were, you got to remember those fish, those bigger fish like that are not very abundant in the lake. They're, less than 1% of the fish in the lake, would be over 18, 19 inches. It's a very small percentage of the fish that they're targeting. So the impacts that they have on that small group of fish, it can be pretty significant, especially when you have as many tournaments as we have and as large as they are. That's the impact kind of on the large size of the fish. On the other end of the spectrum, you have your smaller fish, and when we looked at, or when Auburn looked at that, they found that the fish being weighed in the tournaments at a given age, whether that be age two, three, four, whatever, were larger, considerably larger than the population at large. And really, that's not very surprising. Fishermen catch the most aggressive fish. That just makes common sense. But what that does, if you're not releasing those fish immediately, their survival is sometimes very low, especially if it's a spotted bass. So many of those fish are dying, and those fish, although they may be small at the time, they are the fish that have the potential to grow to those very large sizes. They feed aggressively. They're easy to catch, and if we don't do something to kind of limit the mortality on those smaller fish, you're eliminating the good genetics for faster growth. And you're doing that at a small size. You catch a 15-inch fish. Well, you don't know if that fish is a fast growing 3-year-old or if it's a slow growing 6-year-old. The only way to do that is to age the fish. And when they did that is when they discovered that those fish were typically younger fish growing very fast. So those. That's the reason for the lower end of the slot limit that we're recommending. That you've got to protect those fish. I mean, the majority of the fish being killed in tournaments are those smaller fish, and they have the potential to reach these large sizes, so they have to be protected, or you're eliminating the fish with the genetics that you need to achieve those larger sizes that everybody wants.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks. Offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Is there any concern? I know I've read up on and talked with some buddies about, other fishing practices, like, people, like fishing bass on the bed, and a lot of people are kind of against that because you're kind of targeting your reproducers, right? Like the natural stockers that you have in that watershed. Is there a concern too that like a disproportionate catch rate, mortality rate in your larger breeding fish is hurting the fishery?
No, not at all. I think fishermen are sometimes guilty of, putting their blinders on and just thinking about that fish. Yeah, I mean, if you take a fish off the bed and go weigh it in, yeah, it's going to affect that nest. But there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fish that are never caught off the nest, and those fish offspring survive. And there's another thing that is often misunderstood is the survival rate of those fish. Almost none of them survive. Bass don't provide parental care to their young, like humans and a lot of mammals do. There's a reason that a fish has 5,000 offspring every year, and it's because very few of them survive. The fertility level in the particular lake is really what determines how many of those fish can survive their first winter and become a year old and become part of the breeding population. Survival is extremely low, so you got to keep those things in mind, and not think about individual fish. Think about the population of fish, regardless of whether you take a fish off a nest or not. Only a small percentage of those fish are going to live to become 1 year old, regardless of whether they fish on nests or not.
Gotcha. So talking about, mortality rates, and I know in most animals, your mortality rates are obviously highest when they're young, like in the natural world, like fawns. There's more fawns getting killed than there are, older animals typically in a natural environment. But talking about mortality rates, you talked about the difference between the rules that we have currently on the books are mainly made to control for harvest. And I assume by that, that's kind of harvest and consumption. And we've evolved into a world where we're apparently getting more mortality from the catch and release side of things just because it was so successful, right? People pushed, hey, catch and release for conservation. So we have more catch and release than we do, catching in the grease. Talk to me a little bit about the mortality rates from tournament catches, particularly. I know, a lot of them happen in the summer, it's hot. You have these big events. Just kind of walk us through how that type of thing differs from your typical recreational angling impacts.
Okay, well, first of all, and most people understand that mortality rates vary, and that's typically dependent on the temperature. As the temperature increases, mortality increases. That rate of increase is different between largemouths and spotted bass, and that's one thing that makes the Coosa River unique. Half of those fish out there are spotted bass, and their mortality rates are much higher than largemouths. After 72 degrees, the mortality rate on spotted bass surpasses that of largemouth bass. And once water temperatures exceed 80 degrees, very few of those spotted bass can survive the weigh-in process. And by that, I mean riding around in the live wells all day and then going through the weigh-in process. Catch and release is very effective if it's done at the time of the catch. If you haul that fish around all day and then send it through a weigh-in, then all bets are off at that point. And that's one thing we need to address in these, the way bass tournaments are being run these days. All of those fish are going through the weigh-in process, regardless of whether they're in contention for any of the prizes. There's just a constant parade of 8 to 10 pound bags being weighed in, and those people are not in contention for a prize. They're basically doing that to get points, and it has a lot to do with the way the tournament trails structure their point system. It encourages people to weigh in these fish that really don't have any chance of earning them any money, and there's things like that can be done to reduce this mortality. Catch and release is great, but you have to understand that it's only beneficial if you do it at the time of the catch. Once you've hauled those fish around all day, you're in a totally different world then.
For sure. Yeah, I've got some background playing recreational aquarium keeping, and I've kept fish, I've released fish. I've definitely witnessed what you've talked about, spotted bass being more, susceptible to heat stress, even just on my end when I am just catching them and releasing them. Now you catch and you play one, and he's a little slower when he swims off than a largemouth bass. I've seen that. And then yeah, I've seen, I see the size of the live wells, I see the aeration systems, and I know I talk with guys who, they really try, they up their water filtration capacities. They up the amount of water that's pumping through their bilge pumps. But man, when you've got like down here where I'm at, when you've got surface temps in the 90s and you're hauling a bass around, if you caught them at, 6:30, 7 o'clock that morning and your weigh-in's at 1 or 2, that's a long time in that little tank. And it's just hard to keep those water temperatures low. So I could definitely see that being an issue. Talk to me a little bit. So my understanding is that DCNR's recommendations after doing the study, trying to drop that tournament mortality, is y'all are advocating for a 14 to 20 inch slot limit. Talk to me a little bit about that recommendation. Why was that the recommendation to reduce tournament mortality?
Okay, well, we looked at a lot of different, possible length limits, minimum length limits, different kinds of slot limits, and this was best for the fisheries on the Coosa. A lot of people misunderstand the purpose of a length limit or a slot limit. It doesn't create fisheries, it protects fisheries. You're not going to put a 16 to 24 on one of our lakes and turn it into a fork. That's just not going to happen. You determine your length and bag limits based on the fishery that you're dealing with. The growth rates of those fish, the mortality rates, all of that is part of the model and the decision making process. When you settle on those. You look at Smith, for example. It's got a slot limit, but it's a low one, 13 to 15. And if you were to put a higher one on there, those fish just don't have the potential to exceed that. And it doesn't have anything to do with fishing pressure or anything like that. Those fish are living in a very infertile system, and the potential is just not there. On the Coosa, however, there is a lot of potential. A lot of people aren't old enough to remember that, the Coosa River once held the state record for largemouth bass at over 14 pounds. So that river can produce some big fish, but it's not doing it. And this is a way to kind of bring it back, closer to the way it fished years ago. The lower end of the limit, as I think I mentioned before, is intended to protect those smaller fish with the good genetics, that have the genetic potential to reach larger sizes. And the upper end of that limit is designed to protect the larger females, which are being heavily impacted, by tournaments. Most you do see occasional males that exceed 18 inches, but it's pretty rare. Most of your male bass are going to be less than 18 inches long. So the upper end of that is necessary to protect the larger females.
From what it sounds like that was what I was gathering from the studies. You're trying to protect your genetics, trying to keep your breeding population high. So it sounds like it's obviously good for the bass. What are the perceived benefits that y'all are anticipating for the recreational anglers there?
Well, this would obviously improve the fishing, the quality of the fishing for everyone, not just recreational folks. It would improve it for the tournament fishermen too. And most of the models that we've run on these populations show, increases up to 70% in the abundance of spotted bass over 20 inches. That is a huge increase. Just to kind of put that into perspective, based on creel surveys that we've done in the past, the fishermen can notice increases as small as 10%, where in the past they felt like that was a beneficial improvement. These far exceed those kind of numbers. So it would be a significant improvement to the fishery for everyone, tournament fishermen included. Right now, because the fishery is in a sort of a depressed state, there aren't a lot of fish in those lakes over 20 inches. So, in the short term, you're going to see some poor tournament weights. We aren't denying that. But those fish, it takes about 4 years for them to grow through that protected slot that we recommended. So it won't take long before you start seeing some very significant improvements in the quality of the fishery and to tournament weights.
Yeah, for sure. I can see. I think that's the concern, is that short term you're going to have the reduced tournament weigh-ins, but then in 4 years, if you're thinking about things long term, like I've got a daughter, and it would be great, if by the time I could take her fishing, she's one now, by the time she was 5 or 6 years old, if you could take her up there and know that you'd almost, doubled the amount of fish over 20 inches in a lake, like that would probably weigh into our long-term family vacation planning. We might be more inclined to go up there and vacation up there on some of those Coosa lakes. That sounds pretty tempting. I know the 70% increase, I would definitely notice a 70% increase in my salary, or that's not small potatoes.
No, it's not at all.
So I know the slot was one recommendation, and then I saw kind of tacked in there, that the other recommendation is, that tournaments, if they didn't like the slot, they could do catch weigh release. I know that's super, super popular in the kayak fishing world. I've fished a couple of kayak tournaments and done that, bought my catch board, took the pictures, sent them in, and small local tournaments, but everybody seemed like they're having fun. I know that Major League Fishing does a catch weigh release. So talk to me a little bit more about that. Like, I guess for the people who aren't familiar with it, because I guess really in Alabama, outside of the kayak anglers, I feel like most people may still kind of be in the dark or have a fuzzy idea of how that works. Talk to me about catch, weigh, and release, and why that's just a better alternative for the fish.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, if you catch a fish and release it immediately, that fish's chance of surviving are almost as high as if you had never caught it at all. So there is no better way as far as conserving the quality of the fisheries. There is no better way to conduct tournaments. Now that's a biological perspective. Now I realize that that's not practical for all tournaments, but the technology exists. It's out there for people to use if they want to. I've heard a lot of people, that have been concerned about, they're not opposed to catch, weigh, and release. They're concerned that cheating would be a problem. And personally, I don't see that. I mean, if you want to cheat right now, you can do it. It's only your conscience and a polygraph are preventing you from doing it right now. Most of these are buddy tournaments. If you and I wanted to enter a tournament and cheat, we can do that as easily right now as we could under that format. So I think the benefit to the fishery far outweighs any possible negative threat to the fishing organizations.
Sure. So I know, just top of mind for me, the other places it's being used are kayak tournaments, Major League Fishing. Are there any other, I guess, are there states that have similar management strategies? Like, are there other states that are mandating catch, weigh, and release on any other bodies of water? And if so, what results have they seen in their bass population?
I'm not aware of any state that mandates catch, weigh, and release. There may be some, but there's certainly none in the Southeast that are doing that. That's really a decision that would have to be made by the tournament directors of each trail as an effort to conserve, the quality of these fisheries. We support that and acknowledge that it's best thing for the fishery, but we're not going to require anyone to do that.
Sure. What about the other alternative? What about slots? Are there other bodies of water that are managing with the slot size?
Well, we don't have a lot of lakes with a slot. Harris, some people know it as Wadawi. It has a slot. Smith has a slot. But those are really holdovers from, kind of the old days where, we were trying to manage harvest. Those fisheries are low fertility. They would benefit from the removal of small fish, and at the time those were implemented, 30 years ago, We were trying to encourage harvest of the smaller fish and protect those within the slot. None of those slots were intended to address tournament mortality.
Sure. So this is the big question. So I know talking with Chuck, he said that ever since the press releases went out and the information got out, the phones have been ringing off the hook. What's been the response that y'all have seen so far from the bass fishing tournament community here in Alabama?
Well, I would say from the bass fishing, bass tournament fishing community, they have been, I would say most of them have been opposed to this. And if you talk to them, it really boils down to a loss of revenue. I think all of them would like to have better fisheries, but they're not willing to sacrifice, to make the necessary sacrifices to do that. I think everybody from tournament fishermen to recreational fishermen realize that protecting these fish will deliver a better quality fishery. It's just at a cost that they generally are not willing to take.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. What about, I know, tournament anglers have a big voice and they kind of drive like the fishing product industry, right? Like they're a very vocal group, but they are, the majority. It's easy to or they're the minority, excuse me. It's easy to forget that there's for every tournament angler, you've got a bunch of guys who are just, taking their kids out on the weekend. They're sitting on a bucket on the side of the lake somewhere. What's been your feedback, or have you been getting any feedback from recreational anglers or like property owners up around those Coosa Lake systems?
Oh, sure. We've gotten plenty of calls from them, and you're right. The tournament fishermen are very visible, very vocal, but they're also a minority. They make up maybe 10% of our total anglers in the state, and the other 90% are heavily in favor of this, and many of them would even go so far as to say they won't tournament fishing outlawed completely. And of course we would never consider that, but sometimes I think tournament fishermen are guilty of kind of staying in their own little bubble and not seeing the big picture. They are a very small minority of our anglers in the state.
For sure. And I can see both sides of the argument there. Like I can see it being a minority that is, profiting off of, like you said, a public resource, right? On the flip side, like I've driven all over the state. I've actually fly fished all but 9 of the counties here in Alabama. So I'm missing 9 out of 67. So I've seen a good chunk of our state's waterways. And I know it is true that like on the lakes that have the big tournaments, like the lakes that get a reputation for producing big fish, it's very visible in some of the small towns. People forget about how much of Alabama I think there is off that 65 corridor. You get outside of Mobile, Birmingham, Huntsville, Montgomery, Demopolis, all those little towns, like there's a lot of them where, whether it's recreational hunting or fishing or the tournament bass scene, like that's a fairly substantial cash injection that you see into those communities. What's y'all stance? Like, I know you said that it wasn't, anything in y'all's mind about getting rid of tournament fishing. What do you care to weigh in on the economic importance of tournaments? And did that knowledge factor into your decision when it came to the recommendations to solve the problem there?
No, certainly it did. And we're not opposed to tournaments and what they do, or anybody benefiting financially from these resources. The problem is when it becomes excessive, to the point that it impacts the quality of the fisheries, something has to be done. There has to be something done to neutralize that. And that's why we ultimately felt like the slot limit was the best choice. The other options for reducing tournament mortality are pretty extreme, like limiting field size, limiting the number of tournaments, limiting the seasons when tournaments can occur. This solution allows them to continue to have as many tournaments as they want and to have as many participants as they want. This addresses the mortality within the tournament and allows them to continue to have unlimited tournaments. In my opinion, it's the best of both worlds. There's really not a better solution to this problem.
Sure. And then, something else that's in there is that it only impacts the tournament anglers. And I know, there's, I've read some comments where people feel like you're singling people out, but, it seems like in a few years down the road, it'd be kind of a rising tide lifting all boats. You'd have better tournament fishing, better recreational fishing. And for, the guys who are just out there casually fishing, like that's not a new set of rules that they have to keep up with or anything, like nothing in their world really changes.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's another thing that a lot of these tournament fishermen have voiced their complaints. They feel like it ought to apply to everybody. And we would certainly recommend that if the others were contributing to the problem. But as I mentioned earlier, harvest rates are almost zero, 2 or 3%. And there's really no reason to penalize a group of people that aren't contributing to the problem. They're releasing their catch. They legally have the right to keep 10 if they want to, but they're not doing that. And if they ever do, then they would certainly be included in this. But right now, that just simply isn't happening.
Sure. Yeah. And I know that's, well, I've had conversations with people about that 10 fish rule. And I can't say that I've ever kept 10 bass. I know there's people who do catch and eat bass, but we've had a lot of conversations with different riverkeeper organizations here in the state. And just knowing what I know about the Alabama Department of Public Health's recommendations on fish consumption, there's really no, I have no interest in keeping that many bass. I like to catch them. To me, I feel like the value of that resource is more in the recreational pleasure, tourism dollars, and all that, than it is in a food source. I'd rather eat crappie and catfish. I feel like they taste better anyway. But circling back to the conversation we were having, those small communities, a lot of their revenue is coming in from, out of towners, trickling in the Black Belt. You get people coming in, they want to shoot deer. Tennessee River, you get duck hunters. All the lake chains, you get anglers coming in. You get people, the people from up North Alabama ride down to South Alabama to hang out on the beach in the summer. The people like me who are on the beach, we ride up to hang out on some of those cooler, rocky lakes. So there's a lot of tourism that's driven by that fishery. Do you feel like the changes, like as they take effect, do you feel like that could be a net gain to revenue for some of these little towns that really thrive on that fishing revenue?
Well, it certainly could be. I know there's been plenty of studies done, and all of them indicate that tournament fishermen spend more money, and I don't think anyone would debate that. But what a lot of those studies don't mention is what we discussed earlier, and that is the fact that those people make up a very small percentage of the total angling population. If you improve the quality of the fishing in any lake, it's going to attract more anglers, whether they be tournament fishermen or recreational fishermen. So I think better fisheries will increase that. I just don't believe, a lot of these guys are telling me that it's going to kill tournament fishing, and I just don't see it. I mentioned I fished tournaments for years, and I don't know one of those guys that would quit fishing tournaments because there was a length limit on a lake. I just don't see it.
Right. Yeah, I heard some of that. I saw some of that going around through the Facebook chats, and I'm with you. That's kind of like we've had some elections where people talk about leaving the country if they don't like the results and the data. I haven't seen anybody go that far. So,
No.
yeah, I feel like the guys who were in it got the big bass boats and the graphs and a whole room full of fishing tackle. I feel like they'll stick around for sure. What do you think? So we're kind of, I think, getting into the wrap up stage. I think we've kind of covered everything pretty well. Is there anything that you want to add to it? Is there anything that you feel like we didn't hit that you'd like the public to understand about the proposed rule changes?
No, the only thing that I would point out is that, this is a, I think a lot of people are looking at this as, what does a 14 to 20 inch minimum, I mean, a 14 to 20 inch slot, what does that mean to me today? And, yeah, it would be tough today, but you have to remember that these fisheries are in a very depressed state right now. And the purpose of this is to improve it. And once that happens, there's going to be a lot more fish above that 20 inches, for tournament anglers to catch. You don't get anything good in life without making sacrifices. And this is a perfect example of that. They have complained for years about wanting to improve these fisheries, and this is what is required to do it. And it just boils down to, are they willing to do what is required to give them what they want?
For sure. I do have one last question. So something that I've seen pop up on this conversation is there's people, saying, why don't we fix the problem with stocking? Like, I think there have been some pretty successful, stocking programs down here regarding like flounder. I've heard good things about, striped bass stocking in reservoirs. Is that something that the state has looked into? I think, if I'm not wrong, isn't there a little stocking going on in those lakes, or hasn't there been at one point historically?
Oh, definitely. That's something a lot of anglers don't realize is how long that has gone on. I mean, we've stocked those Coosa River reservoirs for almost 50 years. Of course, until recently, there's really been no way for them to really realize that that's been going on. But we've stocked millions and millions of bass fingerlings in all of those lakes, and it just simply did not make a difference. And for much of that period of time, no one really understood why, because we didn't have the benefit of genetics. Now we understand the genetics, and we understand now why it didn't work. And because of the genetics of those fish in that river system, stocking just is not a viable option. A lot of people will point to Chickamauga and how it was successful there, but what they don't know is why that was successful. Those fish were 90% pure northern largemouth. So when TWRA started stocking it with pure Floridas, although the survival rate on those fish was very low, just like it is anywhere, those that did survive were able to breed with the resident population, and they did that over the period of their lives. If you could get one Florida bass to survive, that fish may spawn, 7 or 8 more times during its life, and it's doing it with a pure northern subspecies. So what that does is creates a natural production of F1s. And that's what happened at Chickamauga. That's why the stocking there improved that fishery. There's no question that it improved it. But what happens over time, once you've introduced those foreign genetics, it tends to dilute the entire population. When they started that program 20 years ago, 90% of them were pure northerns in that lake. Now that has dropped to probably 15%, and it's because those fish continue to breed. The F1s then cross with Florida or cross with a Northern or another F1, and those are not producing F1s. F1s are the only fish that have that hybrid vigor that causes them to reach those, large sizes like that. So, and I guess one way to look at that is that those genetics are kind of a flash in the pan. Yeah, they work, but once you've done it, you can't do it again. You've trashed the genetics of the population, so that's no longer an option. And that's kind of the boat that we're in, in the Coosa River. Those fish in the Coosa have anywhere from 35 to 50% Florida genes in them, and there are no pure Northerns left. There are none. So it really doesn't matter how much money you have and how many fingerlings you put in there, because of the genetics, it's impossible to do what some of these anglers have seen in other lakes. So they just need to understand there are genetic obstacles that we can't overcome, at least not right now. Maybe years down the road, there will be some discoveries that will kind of open that back up again. But right now, it's simply not on the table, and we don't want to encourage anglers to contribute money towards efforts like that when we know that they're doomed to fail.
Sure, that definitely makes sense. I appreciate you weighing in on that. That clears a lot up with me. I think that'll help some people. I really hope the goal of this is to make people, better educated so that they can make decisions. We're not going to try to tell people how to think on this one, just try to get the information out there with them. My understanding is that, these are not new rules that are on the book that are going into effect immediately. My understanding is that there's going to be some further conversation with some stakeholders. So I think I read that there's still a public comment period. If people listening in, if they support the regulations, oppose the regulations, what's a good way for them to get involved and make their voices heard?
Well, we have a conservation advisory board that has representatives on it in districts throughout the state. If you go to our website, you can see that where those districts are, and you can find your representative that represents you on that board, and just call and express to him what your opinion is. He's there to represent you. And as you mentioned, this is only a recommendation at this point. No decisions have been made. There will be plenty of time for public comment periods. That a lot of people think we're trying to sidestep that process, and I can assure you that that is not the case. We want to hear from everybody. We manage these resources for everyone, and we want everyone to have a chance to weigh in.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, definitely. Anybody listening in, if this is something that you feel like it personally impacts you, I would definitely advise you to go ahead and do your part. It's your fishery, so this is a good way that you can be hands-on in managing that fishery, the future of that fishery. Damon, appreciate you coming on the show. Enjoyed talking with you. I feel like I learned a lot today. Hopefully other people did too. And hopefully at some point, maybe me and you can meet up in person. Maybe we can go watch a sunset on a Coosa Lake and catch a bass.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. And I appreciate you doing this, Nick, and helping people to understand this, because there is a lot of misinformation out there. I don't know where some of it is coming from, but a lot of the people that call me, after we have a conversation, they realize that, a lot of what they've heard is not accurate information. So I appreciate your efforts to help get this out there.
Absolutely happy to do it. And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi. where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also brought to you by Killer Dock, combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.